You're listening to the Food Freedom Life Podcast. My name is Brittany Allison, and I spent 6+ years stuck in diet binge cycles, hating my body and envying others who seem to have it all because I never felt enough. What I discovered in my journey to food freedom and becoming a registered dietitian is this: you can either live your life at war with your mind or learn to work in sync with it. So if you're ready to learn how to be in tune with yourself and evolve your life, welcome to the show. This week on the podcast, I am chatting with Becky, a client who is a past member of my small group coaching program, Food Freedom University. This is a 5-month virtual group coaching program to not only break you out of binge eating, emotional overeating, poor body image, and all or nothing self-sabotage habits, but to also kickstart your journey to food freedom and cultivate a healthful life with balance and ease with food and feel more confident in yourself and your body. In our time together and beyond, Becky embraced non-diet living, stopped running away from her fear of weight gain so that she could take real steps toward health and supporting her mind, body, and soul on her terms. The next round of Food Freedom University begins on September 16th, so head to the show notes to book your free discovery call and sign up today. Listen more for Becky's story, and I hope it inspires you on your journey.
Hello.
Hi, how are you? Hold on, let me get my life together here.
Yeah, sure, do what you gotta do.
Yay, there we are. I feel like I'm never on Zoom anymore. There for a while, it was like all I did, and now I never do it.
Hey, that's not a bad thing.
I was going to say, it's a vast improvement, especially for somebody who teaches musical theater. It's a lot easier to teach it in person.
Yeah, totally. Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine trying to teach that on Zoom. That's so hard.
Hilarious. My poor husband's home office is right next to mine, and he had to get air traffic controller headphones because I was like, yo, beast, wow, like all the time. It was driving him crazy. But our marriage survived. And speaking of marriage, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I guess I haven't seen you since then.
I know.
Wild. That feels like an eternity ago, but.
I know, right. Yeah. Now you're married.
So now I'm married.
Yeah, exciting. And now
it's been almost a year already.
Wow. And how's your beautiful pup?
Oh, he's great. Yeah, he's great. We took him for a swim lesson on Monday.
That's incredible. What a time. Did he enjoy it?
He didn't hate it as much as I thought he would. Yeah, because when we were at the cottage, we're in the water, like if Adrian and I are in the water, he cries and cries and he's so sad. And then he'll run back up to the cottage. Like last weekend or a couple weekends ago, he was in the cottage. He didn't want to be outside. We'd just gone for a walk. He heard us jump in because he was in the screened in porch, and I could hear him like wailing up but then he like wants to save us but like is too scared to go in. And so anyway, we booked a swim lesson for him, and there was a ramp and stairs, and he like kept going like in and out of the ramp and did really well and wasn't crying or anything and wasn't crying that the instructor was in the water. And yeah, we got to the point in the lesson where she's like, normally this is where I throw them in. he's too big to throw in. So
he's big, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Adrian got in the water and we kind of like forced him in. And he when he tries to swim, he doesn't use his back legs, apparently. He just lets them like hang.
Yeah.
And then he's splashing with his front paw. Anyway, it was super ungraceful, but we used to do that like a couple times. So we're going to try to take him to the beach and get him like more in the water there where it's more, he knows he can get out. Cause I think that's what he said is part of the issue. So anyway, and then do another swim lesson after that. That's what she recommended.
I love this because I just never really thought about swim instructor for dogs as a career goal, but I'm adding it to my dream job list.
Yeah.
That's like the most fun ever. Yeah, I was a lifeguard all through high school and college. Like, this seems like the natural next step.
Right?
To teach dogs to swim. What a dream.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's how my dog's doing. That's the long-winded update. But how are you doing?
So beautiful. I'm doing great. During the summer, I teach at Carnegie Mellon University, which is a huge musical theater university. I teach at their pre-college program. So I have a bunch of high school students during the summer. And it's always like a steep learning curve to go from teaching college students that are really pretty self-sufficient. And when I say, do A, B, and C, and I'll see you next time and we'll do D together. And these students will come back and be stuck on A and be like, I didn't know what to do. I was afraid I was gonna do it wrong. And I'm like, oh, I always forget that high school students, you have to like spoon feed them until they. So it's always a little bit of a learning curve, but Yeah. I have like 2.5 more weeks of that, and then I go back into full scale, get ready to go back to school mode. So,
Right. All
yeah,
right.
it's a
Yeah,
circle of life.
totally. Yeah, the high school students haven't been thrown in the pool yet.
Exactly. And I my whole life have been a teacher of some kind. So I'm like very used to this like sort of ebb and flow of like summer and back to school, and like this feels very normal to me. But like as I'm getting older, I'm like, it would be really nice to have a break. It would be really nice to have like a little time off. Like this year I was in a show that took up my entire May. Then I started at Carnegie Mellon, and then I have like 2 weeks-ish off, and then I go back to school. And
Yeah.
you know, I don't know. We'll get into my life.
Yeah.
So great to see your face, truly. Like,
Oh,
it really
yeah.
is. I hear your voice in my head all the time, so it's really good to see
Yeah,
your face. Exactly,
put a face to the voice.
exactly.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. How do you feel about doing the podcast?
I feel really excited. Like, I was talking to my husband about it a little bit yesterday, and I was like, I feel like this process of like, and I always come back to this word alignment, but this process of like feeling like realigned with just health and a calm existence has been such a long process. And the session that we did together was like another brick on that road. Like it was just like one more thing that like paved the way toward feeling like toward a sustainably healthy life.
Yeah.
And I feel like any opportunity that I have to like talk about the difference between my life before I learned everything that I learned from you and after is I will take any opportunity to talk about that. So
Amazing. I love that. And this is a great platform to be able to do that.
yeah. I mean, I have so many friends that like I hear myself 3 years ago in what they're saying, and I'm like, you just it's tiny, constant baby steps. But I always send them to your podcast. I'm like, just start with the podcast. Like, just start
Yeah.
with that's where I started, and it was that's what really like just opened my brain to how like I feel like diet culture is just it's such a fine line. It's such a thin line, and the road to good health is so it's a sphere. Like, it's not a line. It's a whole like ecosystem. It's not just one thing. So
Yeah.
there's not like one thing that you do that all of a sudden, oh, everything's great now. Now I can run a 5K. Now I can, lose 50 pounds.
Yeah.
That's not it at all. Like, yeah. So that's how I feel about being on your podcast. It's a dream.
Oh, I love that. Well, I'm really excited to be chatting with you today. And yeah, I'm just really, looking forward to getting into it and diving in and talking about the before and the after from a non-diet perspective.
Yeah. Me too, me too.
So maybe starting out, why don't you tell everybody who's going to listen to this a little bit more about you as a person?
All
How would you
right.
describe yourself? Yeah.
I am when I try to do I'm asked to do this a lot actually, to like describe who you are, like sum yourself up. And like in my heart, like the first thing that I always think of is I'm a teacher. I'm a firstborn. I'm a Virgo. I'm like a type 9 Enneagram. Like I am born to like be the snowplow, and that is such a big part of my identity that I think that's just really who I am. I'm a teacher. I teach at the University of Pittsburgh. I teach musical theater there, and I teach all over the place. I'm an actor and a singer, a songwriter. I dabble in a lot in choral music. I do all kinds of stuff, but I would say first and foremost, I'm a teacher. So.
Yeah, I love that. And when I think of you, I just think brightness. That's really like that's the word that really comes to mind when I think of you. It's just like light
Oh, that means so much.
and like fullness. I don't know. Those are the things that I think of when I think of you. Just
Thank you so much. That really means a lot. I really try to be up throughout my life the person that I needed at any point. And you have to be your fullest self so that people who need you can find you. And even if you're flawed, even if you are making wrong choices, make them loudly and proudly, because then other people can find you and you can get help when you need it, because people will see where you are. So that's really meaningful. I really appreciate that. I try to be that person.
Yeah, just to step into who you are and to do it unapologetically, because it's going to lead you down the places that you need to go.
I mean, like I said, I teach musical theater and I have so many students that are applying for programs and they're like, oh, I can't do this because this person's doing this and I have to do this because, you know, they're looking for this. And I always tell them, like, if you are, and this is a rule that I take very dear to my own heart, if you are trying to be something else to fit in, the people who need you won't find you. And the people that you need, you won't be able to find because you're not yourself. You're not who you are. And when you put that mask on, you're missing who is meant for you to find because they don't know where you are. So, programs that are looking for you, people that are looking for you have to be your truest self to attract what you want. So, yeah, that's important to me. And, you know, I'll be 50 in 6 weeks or so, and I feel like it's taken me a long time to get to the point that it's not that I feel like I have to be a truth shouter or somebody who, you know, isn't apologetic, because I certainly feel like I do things for which I need to apologize sometimes, but I definitely feel like I try to be consistently who I am. I try to be consistently myself. So, yeah.
I think that's just such wonderful advice and very applicable to this journey too, that
I agree.
showing up as authentically you and releasing that shame about who you are or what you look like or, you know, your behaviors, just it helps you to go down the path that you need to go down and do the healing that you need to do to really just be able to embody you.
Exactly. Exactly. I think you're exactly right. Yeah.
Getting into the before times, when would you say that your issues with food and body image started?
Oh, very young. I would say, I mean, my first real memory of having issues with food or just being like aware of other people's perception of my relationship with food, I was probably 10, and my mom was bragging to her friends that I had gotten a pair of jeans that were size slim. And she was like, I can't believe that I have a daughter who wears slim jeans. And I was like, oh, that is an important thing to fit into slim jeans. And then when I outgrew those jeans and I had to go into regular jeans, it was never verbalized that it was disappointing, but I felt disappointed. And I just did not have the, I mean, I was a child. Like, I didn't have the understanding of clothes are supposed to fit you. You are not supposed to fit clothes. You know, get the next size up, get pants that fit you. But that was the first moment that I felt really just inhibited by other people's perception of my size. And the personality that I have now in like a 12-year-old is a lot. It is a lot in a kid. And I struggled socially, I struggled academically, I didn't know where I belonged in the world. I definitely grew into who I am, but I've always felt like a big presence in a room. And I always sort of justified, like, well, I should have a big body because I have a big presence in the room. And in my head, I was like, you know, when I was trying to lose weight, I was making myself smaller. And even psychologically, I would think, oh, you know, the world just needs less of me. I need to be less in this space. And when I would have, and I, you know, I have lost a lot of weight and gained it back and lost it and gained it back many, many times in my life. But I remember a huge weight loss about 10 years ago. And I just remembered like sitting in a room quietly and looking around me and just being like, oh, this is how quiet people live. This is what it's like to be a little quiet person. And I don't think I ever put together in my head how incredibly harmful that was, that I was insisting on being perceived as something different. I was uncomfortable. I was not comfortable in that body or in that psychological headspace because it wasn't who I am. I was just, it was something that I was trying on. And I was punishing myself. I was punishing my body and I was punishing my actual self because of just this like profound sense of deeply rooted discomfort with the size of my personality and the size of my body. So it's something that I have always felt. I've always been loud in a room. I've always been the center of attention for better or worse. I definitely it affected my relationships with teachers and my parents and my siblings and romantic relationships for a long time. But again, it was all really rooted in this lack of acceptance of my whole self, of like, like this sphere of myself. So yeah, that's, I would say that that's really where it started for me very, very young. This sense of like small is good and big is bad, but I'm just a big person. I'm big. I am loud and I have a temper and I'm emotional and just being unable to manage that, feeling like I was out of control in absolutely every aspect. And that control word felt like the right thing, you know? It wasn't, but it felt like it was.
Yeah, it almost felt like you had to go down that path. Like you were supposed to, and this is the right thing to do, and I should do the right thing. And so I need to reel it all in.
And I remember in our the first consultation that I ever had with you, we talked about my relationship with diet culture, which had always been, I feel in control or I feel out of control. I feel like if when I'm in control, everything's fine and I can do this and I can, I'm eating in alignment with this very specific plan and I'm exercising X amount of times a week and I have control over my life. And that word control has been the absolute bane of my existence. I absolutely blame so much of the struggle that I've had in my life with this insistence that I have to have control. None of us have control. Like none of life is going to happen. Life, I mean, I have again started and restarted this diet journey so many times in my life, but every time something would happen, like I had to have an emergency hysterectomy 3 years ago. And prior to that, I had been on Noom and I felt like I'm losing weight. I'm in control of my life. And then I had to have massive surgery and I was out of commission for 6 weeks, like totally unable to do anything. And I gained all of the weight back. And I was like, I had thrown it all away. I had lost control. And therefore, just why bother? Why try if you've lost control? And I just, when I started working with you and we started talking about just having a sense of your actual self and your own needs and listening to yourself and being aware of like the pitfalls of diet culture, really for me, what resonated the most was this fear of losing control. And I really feel like that's something that I have been working the most on in the last like year or so of my life. So yeah, control. Oof.
Yeah.
None of us have control.
Yeah, it's this funny thing where we're taught that we can control most everything, including our bodies. And it's this false notion that if you just eat in this exact way, if you exercise in this exact way, then you're going to have this outcome, which in and of itself is not inherently true. But yeah, we don't have total control necessarily over what we eat and how we exercise because those things don't happen in a vacuum, right? There's all this life surrounding it and there's emotions surrounding it and so many pieces that we just don't have this like total, white knuckle grip of control over, but we try to. And then when things don't go according to plan, it doesn't fit the paradigm that we're taught we should be in. It's like all hell breaks loose and we don't know how to manage it. And then we feel like crap about ourselves and it's really hard to get back into it.
I think especially for firstborn Virgo, like I've always really enjoyed running. It's something that I've always enjoyed. I played soccer when I was in high school. Terribly. I was a terrible soccer player. I played it because it was a co-ed team and there were cute boys on the team. But I have always really enjoyed it. But I was always really held back by this sense of, in order for me to have a good run, everything must be perfect. Climate must be perfect. The music on my iPod must be perfect. My clothes must fit perfect. Everything has to be perfect in order for it to be a good run. And when I started running again, on my birthday last year, I was like, I'm gonna run no matter what. I'm gonna come to terms with the fact that like every run is not gonna be a mountaintop experience. Some runs are going to just be terrible, but some are gonna be really gratifying. And ultimately, the goal is going to be really gratifying. But if I'm held back by these little pretend walls that I'm putting up for myself, then I'm never going to be successful. I read a couple of books that I found really helpful, but I think the most helpful book that I read was Jeff Galloway's Running Until You're 100 book, in which he very specifically says, you just have to do it no matter what. Like, if it was easy and fun every single time, everybody would do it. And everybody doesn't do it. It's supposed to be a little bit hard. That's why you're doing it, because you want to challenge yourself. You want to do something that's a little bit hard. And like getting out of that perfection only mindset has been so liberating, and it has applied itself in many other areas of my life. I think that is another aspect of our conversations that we had during our sessions that really struck me, this sort of departure from a perfection only mindset of a cheat day mindset of this sense of well you've worked really hard and now this is your reward and you can have four almonds instead of three. Like this insane, like it's simply not a sustainable way to live to treat yourself like a puppy that's being potty trained. Like you are a whole complex human existing in a world that is regularly on fire. So you have to like think about things in terms of the longer distance goal, not the shorter term weigh in week to week, but what am I trying to do in 10 years? What am I aiming for in the long term? What small step can I take today that's going to get me closer to where I want to be in 10 years? And I adopted this motto every year. I have a motto for myself for the year, and I always wear a necklace that reminds me of my motto. And this year it's a little acorn, because my motto this year is dig deep, grow strong. Because it's not just about the flowering, it's not just about the fruit, it's not just about what's on the scale. It's not about that at all. It's about digging deep and living your richest, truest, most vibrant life. I also have had a sign hanging in my bathroom for years that said, be your best Becky. I had somebody make it for me. It was real cute. It said, be your best Becky. And I remember in one of our sessions talking about with the other people that were in our group who I keep in touch with and adore about how harmful that can be to have this expectation on yourself that you always have to be the best version of yourself. And I took it down and I had a new sign made that said, be your favorite self. And oh, like how liberating to get to be my favorite version of myself, which happens to be the version of me that doesn't, that feeds my body in a way that feels good. That when I go to bed at night, I don't have a stomach ache. That when I'm moving my body, it's not out of fear or anxiety or stress or obligation, but out of absolute, like, unbridled joy. And so much of that is just in this sense of letting go of perfectionism and letting go of this sense that everything has to be perfectly set up for me to be successful. It's just simply not possible.
It's an illusion. It's fake. It's just, yeah, we're always grasping for it because, again, we're taught that we can, if we just try hard enough, and if you just, keep everything in line, you will make it. You will get there. And it's like, that's just not reality. And I really like what you said about kind of looking at, where do I want to be 10 years from now? Because when you take that larger zoomed out view, now that meal that you ate that like maybe didn't make you feel the best, or you ate too much, or whatever, it doesn't matter. Or, that time that you were too tired to go for, a run or whatever, it doesn't matter. And it doesn't shatter your whole world and take you down. It's like, all right, we'll just on to the next one. And that's all. It doesn't need this massive restart. It's just kind of let's keep going because, 10 years from now, if I'm still just like working on consistency, not in the perfect sense, but consistency in the sense that I get back up when things don't go according to plan and I don't, let it completely tear me down because I've tied it to my self-worth and who I am and all of these things, then now we can just keep going and actually get where we want to be.
Exactly. And that comes back to that. I mean, I'm a visual learner and I'm always thinking about like what visualization is going to help me with the goal that I'm trying to achieve. And what I've been thinking of this in this last year when I've really prioritized my health, it's always been about just being aligned with a goal, which is a long, healthy life. That is my goal. I do not care what I look like in a swimming suit. I am, again, almost 50. I do not care. I do not care if I'm going to run my fastest 5K tomorrow. I do not care what the scale says. I simply do not care. What I care about is, did I have a great time when I went out after rehearsal and drank two beers with my friends? I had an amazing time. I would have had three, except I had to teach in the morning. Like, I don't feel at all like I have to pay for that. I have to run harder because of that. Another thing that I always come back to is this sense that I'm running toward a goal. I'm aligned toward a goal. I am rolling this whole self that I have toward a goal and not away from something. I'm not rolling away from that giant piece of chocolate cake that I ate last week. That's part of this. That's part of the ball that's rolling forward. All of these things are just things that I'm picking up along the way. And I have found it to be really sustainable when complicated, hard things happen that they're just rolling with me. Come on, we're going for a run. You're coming with me. Rather than this terrible thing happened and I have to go run so I can forget about it. Like that's not it at all. It's coming with you. And I think that, as we are all, reeling from just existence in the 21st century, there is no way to promise yourself that tomorrow is going to be a smooth, easy day. There's just no way. I acknowledge my privilege very much in the fact that I don't have children. I don't even have a pet. I get so much sleep. It's amazing. I have a job that I love, that I feel really passionate about. I have the time to invest in my psychological health, my mental health, my personal physical health and wellness. I have a doctor that I really like. There's a lot of privilege involved in this. But I think at the most basic accessible level, it's about being in tune with what does health really mean to me? What does good health mean to me? And isolating that from what do I want to look like? Like separating what good health really means from other people's perception and other people's, what they're taking in about you. You don't owe anybody else anything. You just owe yourself what your goal is and what you want. And for me, that is to live a happy, healthy, long life, which is made easier by, keeping myself active. I lost my mom when she was 50. She had a heart attack. I was 23. It was like the week after my 23rd birthday. And my life is very much split into these two pieces. My mom was morbidly obese, and struggled with her health her entire life. The shame of her weight gain prevented her from going to the hospital, prevented her from going to a doctor for 20 years, which would have saved her life. She died of something that was absolutely preventable, but she was ashamed, deeply ashamed of her body. As I'm approaching turning 50, and this number that just feels like an anvil hanging over my head and has felt like this my whole life, it feels like a very quantifiable thing to just be like, I just want to live. I just want to live. I want to live a life that I'm happy in, that I feel like every day I am doing something to make myself happy. And I And not out of spite or out of fear or out, again, out of any sense of obligation to anybody else, but because it's what I want. I also want to eat a li live a life that is full of donuts. I want to eat a donut, you know? When I see a good donut, you better believe I am going to eat that donut. Like, and without shame and without having to run more miles to make up for it. I just want to live a whole round rolling life.
Yeah, and shifting your perspective from how you want to look to health is just, it sounds so simple. And I think a lot of people might think like, oh, well, aren't they just kind of the same thing? If I, look better and I weigh less, then I'm healthy. But it's no, I mean, shifting your perspective from one to the other involves a deep change in how you feel about the behaviors that you're engaging in. It helps you break away from that perfection, that all or nothing, the black and white. It allows for you to, bring everything with you and just like keep going instead of it always being stop, start, stop, start. It feels so much different as well. And I think that's a really profound shift that happens in this journey, is genuinely moving from what do other people want from me to what do I want from me?
Right.
What do I want my life to look like, regardless of other people?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I mean, I learned so much about this from our time together and from the advice that you gave to like stop following people on Instagram who are obsessed with diet culture and start following big runners. Start following people who have the body that you have. Like it changed so much for me just to like liberate myself from this sense of what I should do, air quotes there, what I should be doing and what I should look like and what health looks like, again, big ol' air quotes on that, to like what does life look like? What does a joyful, like movement-filled life look like at every size? That felt really great and really important. Liberation from the all or nothing mindset. I mean, it's a process. It's such a big process to get away from that, especially, again, for somebody who's really control oriented, like I have always been. But I think too that, something that I as I've been on this journey myself toward health, not away from fat, but toward health, which is, a body that is just existing in space and weighs what it weighs and wears whatever size it wears. I've found in so many changes in my perspective after the session that we had. I felt like all of a sudden, if I have clothes that are six different sizes in my closet, but they all fit me, great. It doesn't matter. This dress fits me. It fits me differently than it did 50 pounds ago, but it still fits me. So it doesn't bother me that it's a size 18. Like I'm still going to wear it. Clothes will fit my body, and I will be comfortable and happy in the clothes that I have on my body without thinking so much, being so obsessed with size. I weigh in from week to week for data collection purposes, and I feel very strongly that I get on the scale, I look at what it is. I put it in my phone and then I forget. I literally forget week to week what I have. If you ask me right now, I would have no idea. It's not a relevant piece of information for anything except for my doctor. So I like to keep track of it for that. But some weeks I gain weight, and when that happens, I say, okay, well, that's a very small amount of more weight pushing down on the earth this week. And that's all it is. That's all that number is. I think too that like the I think culturally we have shifted away from this, you look great. And this is my own experience, but I have experienced a weight loss in accompaniment with changes in my life in the last year. I did not set out on this process with the intention of achieving a goal weight at all. I set out in this process to find a healthier version of myself. And that is another thing that I wear on my neck every day, is a little thing that just says, I didn't change, I found myself. And I didn't find myself, I'm finding. It's a process. But I'm just looking for myself. That's all I'm doing. And I feel like in the past when I have lost weight, something that has always been in the back of my mind is, are people noticing? Are people commenting? Are people noticing? And like, I just make these little check marks in my head, like, okay, this person noticed, this person noticed. I think culturally we're shifting away from that because it's very, very rare that people will comment on my body. And when they do, it's usually a person of a different generation that will comment on it. And, you know, I take that along with a lot of things that people that I don't necessarily align with. Okay, great. Thanks. Doesn't matter. Put it away. And other than that, it's not something that other people think about. So it's not something that I really think about. I think about it when I put clothes on and I'm like, oh, this fits differently. I'll put it, I have this box of clothes and I'm like, these fit differently right now. I'll try them again later, or I'll put them away and, you know, maybe I'll come back to them and maybe I won't. Or I take them to the Goodwill. Like, those are the options. I feel like since we're moving away from this culturally, and a lot of people who are my age and younger, it's not something that's appropriate to do, to comment on other people's bodies. It has helped me so much to not feel the weight of other people's expectations on their perception of me and on the way that I am being perceived. It really is not a thing that I spend any time worrying about, which has been really refreshing.
And I mean, it sounds like there's just so much more flow in the whole system. It's just like, all right, you know, I'm doing what feels good. I'm taking care of myself. I'm not pushing myself in an intense way to do it. Like, yeah, I push myself sometimes to go for a run, and other times, like, maybe I back off, but I'm just doing what feels good and supports my body. And, you know, I know in 10 years, future me is going to thank present me for all the things that I'm doing right now. And like, here's how my body is responding to that. And like, maybe it wouldn't have, and maybe it would have, but like, I'm going to do the things regardless. It doesn't, that's not the focus of everything. Like, it's not all.
Absolutely. Yeah. It does. It definitely, it's much more important to me that I am able to run without injury, to exercise, to carry my heavy backpack from my car to my office without feeling like I need like a 10-minute break to do, like, that's way more important to me than pants. I don't care about pants. I am very, again, very privileged. I have an amazing husband who is super supportive of whatever I do because he did not fall in love with my body. He fell in love with me. Like, he and I have had enough conversations about this for him to know, you know, that my goal is not size related, that my goal is, again, long, happy, healthy life. That's what we're going for. But detaching myself from the habits that were really what felt like control and out of control, but were really just habits. Like the habit of, oh, there's a McDonald's. Do I know when I'm gonna eat again? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I should eat. I should eat. And then just like, go run into McDonald's, grab some French fries, grab a Diet Coke, come back out. Okay. And then go home and eat dinner. Like, just this habit of, and it was, that's literally the only way I can explain so many of these things that felt like they were such a big part of my life, and they felt like control versus out of control, but they were simply habits. And once I broke them, once I just stopped doing them and told myself, this is not really aligned with what you're trying to do. Like, this is not, you don't feel great after this. Why are you punishing yourself? Why are you doing this? It has, like, actually just listening to myself, listening to my own needs, and not to this sort of overriding sense of, this is what you do. This is what you did, this, and now you go to McDonald's. You know, like, I just stopped doing that. And in fact, I was just thinking about this the other day because I drove past a McDonald's that I did not even know was at a place. And I was like, I felt that little like, oh, should I stop? Oh, wow. I haven't thought about that in so long. Like, but I didn't. I was like, I just don't have any interest in it. And that just says again to me how much of it was habit, how much of it was just like this ingrained sense of, this is what, when you're busy, you eat at McDonald's. When you're, and that's That's just not how I live anymore. And it's probably true for a lot of people that when you are busy, you have no choice. But I have a choice. I don't have children and I get lots of sleep. So I just make myself a little turkey wrap and stick it in my lunchbox and carry it around with me. And when I'm hungry, I eat that.
Yeah.
And it tastes really good. I really like it. Like it's not like, I guess I'll just eat this turkey. I love it. I like finely curate like the way that my sandwiches taste, and like it feels like a reward. It feels like a treat.
Yeah.
And I feel good afterward, which just feels like such a great bonus.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like what you said about, it's like, okay, I've done this and this and this, and now I get McDonald's, and it's just like getting out of that mindset of there being all these like external things that need to happen in order to get food, and actually just going in towards you. Because yeah, sometimes you're gonna maybe want McDonald's. Totally, McDonald's is
Yeah.
delicious.
Oh, yeah.
But
It's delicious.
if you're actually just like focusing on me and how do I feel and what do I need, there's no longer that knee-jerk reaction that leads to McDonald's. That's completely separate from like how you actually feel and what's actually going on inside.
Absolutely. And I think for me, that was the problem. It wasn't McDonald's is my favorite food. That was not it. Like, donuts are my favorite food. I am not willing to negotiate on donuts. McDonald's is not my favorite food. It's food that you eat when you're really busy and you're stressed and you just need to eat something. You need to eat something that's going to fill you up. That's what McDonald's is for. I was not, that's not what I was using it for. I was using it as a way to like just sort of continue on this like this is what we do. This is the path. This is what we do when we're busy and you're running from one thing to another. You go to McDonald's. And I had always done that. Like my family had always done that. It just felt like the right thing. But this is not a slam on McDonald's because McDonald's breakfast, chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Delicious. Absolutely delicious. Yeah, I definitely feel like just isolating what these the difference between a habit and like an actual need. Like what do I need to do to like keep myself going? Isolating that was a big part of sort of discovering this part of my journey. Getting away from that sense of control versus out of control, all or nothing. I'm looking at that habit for what it really was, which is just a habit. It's just a habit like a lot of other bad habits that I had gotten into over the course of the years and just needed to just to isolate and stop doing. And I have definitely like saved a ton of money. Well, that was another thing. I was looking at how much money I was spending on the go and between like McDonald's and Starbucks and like just other little expenses like that. I was like, this is too much money. I'm spending too much money on this stuff. So yeah, just getting away from that was, it was really, it felt really liberating.
And what you were saying too, like getting into just like what do I actually need, what does my body need, but then linking that with what you were saying about, your sandwich, and I finally curate my sandwich to make sure that it feels so good and it feels like a treat, it feels like a reward, but like it's, super nourishing and it feels good to eat, my body feels good and it gives me energy, like shifting away from that kind of also diet culture perspective of like food is only fuel and food is only calories and energy and macros and like all of these things, like into food needs to fuel me, yes, but I also really need to enjoy it. When I can strike that balance between those two things and allow room for both, that is where true longevity lies.
That is the truth. That is the truth. I really started this journey toward realigning with better food intake and toward better health almost exactly a year ago. And I have always felt that every time I've tried to do this, there's been an end date. Like by this time next month, I need this to be XYZ. And when I started this process for myself this time, and really after having acquired the knowledge that I acquired from our conversations and from reading books that I felt really were pushing me in the right direction and following smarter influencers, and I feel like I haven't just I haven't just like changed my diet. I've
Yeah.
changed my life, like, and not in a way that is condescending or smug, but in a way that is like sustainable. It's a sustainable existence.
Yeah.
There are a lot of tools that I use to make these things more accessible to me. You know, looking at it's always important to me to think about the little things that we do in our lives to make our own existence better. And I just posted something about this on Instagram recently. Like, what do you do to just make your life a little bit easier? And one of the things that I do, I eat the exact same breakfast every single day. And it's so easy to just be like, I had this. But also, I love it. It's an egg, like it's an English muffin with a little bit of cheese and a good fried egg and a banana that's cut up into like nice sized pieces and a big iced coffee. I dream about this before I go to bed. Like, I get so excited to wake up and have that like icy coffee and oh, the delicious egg. It's accessible, but it's also like something that I really love. I always read the Wikipedia article for a book that I'm reading because I need to know what happens. Life is too uncertain. Like, it makes things more accessible for me. I carry during the school year, I'm not proud of this, and my students make fun of it. I carry a wheelie suitcase around with me because my bag is too heavy. I teach musical theater. There are 50 different folders. Carry it in this wheelie bag. I'm saving my back. I might look like a big dork. I don't care. I am making my life more accessible to myself.
Yeah.
And to me, having an aligned and whole life is about finding ways to make health accessible and happy. How do I make health something happy? Finding this delicious turkey wrap that I love to make for myself, like knowing what kind of greens I like on it, knowing the best brand of turkey for myself, what kind of cheese I really like discovering that makes health accessible to me. And it doesn't make it, this is this many calories, so I can only have this many calories. Like, I have no idea. I just know what's good for me and what feels good, and that's so much more valuable to me
Yeah.
than knowing my, I don't even know what a macro is.
Yeah,
So, and you know what? I don't want to. I don't want to know.
forget about it. Forget about
I don't want to know.
And so going into this journey, do you remember what your fears were?
I think that in the past, when I have gone on Weight Watchers or Noom, I always feared failure. I feared, and especially with Weight Watchers, because I always went to those in-person meetings, and it was always a bunch, and I don't mean to sound ageist, but it was a lot of old women who had been doing this since the 70s and were at Lifetime. And like, you would weigh in, and then I would go in there and I'd be like, okay, so I stayed the same this week, but you know, I felt pretty healthy and I did this. And then I would just hear them talk about like, I ate four crackers instead of three and I gained 3 pounds this week, and I just can't do that anymore. And it was so deeply harmful to me in hindsight, but at the time, I felt like I am failing. I'm failing. I will never be successful because I'm looking at these people and they've been doing it for 40 years and they are not successful. So it is a pass fail and I am failing. That has historically been a big problem for me. In when I feel like I hit bottom last year because of a couple of factors. I had lost my dad really suddenly, as you know. And I just felt unmoored. I felt like I didn't have any vision for what my life was supposed to look like. I mean, I was happy in my job and I'm happy in my marriage. I have a good life. I really do. But there was this just unwavering sense of I'm not myself. I'm not who I'm supposed to be. And that was what was finally like, I need to figure out what I want, and I need to find a path to get to where I want to go. And that was where I felt like all of the things that we had talked about that I didn't feel like instantly changed my life. I felt like these are things that I'm putting away. You know, I'm going to apply them when I can, but you know, it's when I started to realize that that sense of I need to find a longer path. I need to find a path for my life and not I need to fit in these jeans or I need to look better for my high school reunion. Once I started to think about that, I feel like everything that we had talked about made all of those fears mute. I just didn't feel them anymore. I think that if I had to sum up, like, what is your biggest fear, Becky? What is your biggest fear? Alligators. Alligators are my biggest fear. But my second biggest fear, failure. It's failure. I had always given myself the absolute highest stakes. People are looking at you and they are expecting you to maintain this. And you are a leader. You have to lead. You have to show people how to do this. And it's paralyzing. It's an absolutely paralyzing way to live. Understanding that my body is my body. And if I expect bodily autonomy in every other aspect of my life, I have to also have it in my weight. Like, what I weigh is part of my bodily autonomy. I get to choose. I get to decide what my body, who I am, like inside is not connected to my body. This, my body is just a body. It's just a thing. And I get to decide what happens with it. The internal me decides what happens with the external me. I feel like that fear of failure just is, it's just not as loud.
I remember when we were talking in group about body neutrality, and you were like, "I have
I
arms."
have arms. Listen, I run. I run probably like 12 miles a week. Some weeks it's 9, some weeks it's 15. It really depends. But I run a lot and I love it and I feel great. And my legs, amazing. My arms, I'll do anything for my arms. And every now and then I'll be like, I should lift things. I should try lifting things. But then I'm like, oh, I don't know. I have like carpal tunnel. It's my piano player. Like, meh, meh, meh. And my arms are just, they're flabby. And you know what? I don't care. I have arms. Look at them. Look at my arms, people. I have arms. I'm a person with arms. I have never looked at another person that I loved and had any respect for and thought, man, I wish their arms were more shapely. And I never think that. Like, you never think about somebody's arms. Like, what a weird thing to like be obsessed about. So, I just am a person with arms. I have arms. What are you gonna do? You have arms. I'm glad I have arms.
Oh my gosh, that was a great sound bite, all of that.
So glad I have arms. I'm grateful for arms.
Oh man, we get so hung up about arms, don't we? And I think
No.
women, the whole idea of like bingo wings and like flabby arms and oh, my arms make me look like a whale in pictures. And it's like their arms, like what are they supposed to be? Why do we have all these ideas about what they're supposed to be? Who are we?
Who cares, right? I know. I mean, I always just think like when I think about my friends and the people that I love, and when I think about all of the things that I love about them, and if I had to list the top 100 things, none of those things would be related to their body. And if I had to think about things about them that I don't like, none of those things would be related to their body. So why would I worry about that? Like, why would I worry about other people's perception of my body when the people that I love and whose opinion of me I actually really care about probably have zero thoughts about my body. And if they do have zero thoughts about my body, they're probably not really my friend. So that's that. I don't know. I think a lot of that comes with maturity, but yeah, I feel I have felt in the past, having lost a lot of weight in the past, that there were definitely people that were more magnetized toward me when I was in a thinner body. And I think this time around, having lost a significant amount of weight in the last year, when I see something like that happening, I just am automatically like, no, we're not, no, we don't do that. I just refuse to, I don't want to reward that kind of behavior. I don't want to reward it in myself. I don't want to reward it in other people. Bodies are just bodies. Some weeks you weigh more than other weeks. Some years you weigh more than other years because some years are just harder than other years. And our lives are just one season after another. And some seasons are very difficult seasons. And some seasons you simply don't have the bandwidth to find your favorite self. And some seasons you do. And when you do, you should. And when you don't, just get through it, sister. Just get through it. Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's interesting. That is a common thing I hear a lot that, well, when I lost weight, when I was smaller, people were nicer to me. People talked to me more. And, I think to an extent, of course, that is true. There are going to be people who treat you better because you look a certain way and who treat you worse because you don't. And I mean, what would you say to that?
I mean, my if one of my students, one of my college students came to me and said that she had recently lost a significant amount of weight, and there was this guy that she had always had a crush on who didn't ever give her the time of day, who suddenly was really interested in her because she had lost weight, I would simply say that he's not interested in you. He's not
Oh,
interested in you. He's not that into you. He's into your body, which is what it is now, but if this is somebody with whom you want to build your life, your body's going to change. I mean, it's your, you might have children, you might have an accident and not have arms anymore. You want somebody who will love you for who you are internally, your whole self. And if that is connected to the shape of your body, of your mortal coil, that's not a person who loves you. That's not a person who even likes you. That's a person who's only thinking about themselves. And that's to be pitied, truly. Like, that's a shame. And people like that, it doesn't mean you can't have them in your life, but you've got to have them on a leash. If you give them free rein of your mental health, it can be so deeply damaging. You've got to build a You gotta protect your peace, build a little fence around yourself, and don't let people like that through the fence.
That's I think really awesome advice that they're not your people. They're not into you. They're not actually into you if they were only into you when you're smaller.
Right. I just can't imagine personally living with the knowledge that someone that I loved only loved me when a certain number appeared on a scale. Like, what an awful qualifier for love. What an awful thing to have this pressure all the time of having to weigh X amount in order to be worthy of this person's love. Like, and how gross to be a person whose love is based on a number. Like, how gross. I read an article recently, and I wish I could remember where it was, but it was talking about how the most fat phobic people are former fat people. And I've thought about that a lot because I think that so much of my shame with my body and with my relationship with diet culture was deeply rooted in a fear of being fat. Like, and learning that about myself and it was uncomfortable. It was really, I feel emotional thinking about it. It was really uncomfortable to discover that about myself, that I was so deeply fat phobic that that was fueling my self-hatred and fueling my relationship with diet culture and with trying to be in a smaller body and trying to fit into this. Like, I'm still unlearning 50, 49 years of bad habits and I'm working on it for the first time ever, in this year. And I think a lot of our culture is working on it for the first time ever. A lot of our society, a lot of people that we know who were raised honestly in the 90s when like Kate Winslet was considered plus size, which is insane. Like that is truly an insane statement. I think she was a size 6. That is insane. So I think a lot of us are sort of unlearning something that's just really crocheted into our fibers of ourselves. This sense of being big shows a lack of self-control. It shows that you are unable to have any sort of discipline. You're lazy. You're not a good worker. All of these things are rooted in, and if it was any other thing, we would have stamped it down immediately. We would have, but because it's fat and it's so culturally acceptable to be anti-fat, it's just sort of slid through. So it's something that I've continued to work on, and something that's been really helpful in that is an insistence on following influencers, fashion influencers in bigger bodies. exercise influencers and bigger bodies, runners. For me, it has been such a huge thing to follow a couple of like runners in bigger bodies because it says to me there is no such thing as a runner body. Like
Yeah.
there it does not exist. That is not a thing. Every body that runs is a runner's body, and it's not about like time. It's about finishing. Get done. Finish the race. It doesn't matter when you finish, just finish. And it's been such a great metaphor for the journey for me. But again, like that sense of self-loathing was so rooted in my loathing of other people. And I see it in others' reactions to my weight loss and to the conversations that people have with me about other people's bodies that they'll think are appropriate. And it's just such a it's a gross part of our culture.
It is. It is. And learning about it and bringing it to the forefront from like deep within the depths of you and acknowledging it and challenging it and no longer accepting it as part of how you view other people and the world, it really does shift how you view yourself and your body as well. It is so important. And I think that that's a part of this journey and a part of body image work that is key. We don't talk about it a ton, but it is key for sure. So, what's one piece of advice that you would maybe tell somebody who's struggling with their relationship with food or body image right now, who's maybe like on the fence or just listening to this to gain some hope?
You know, I would say that the most important thing is to remember that your relationship with yourself is the most important relationship. And if you are not cultivating a relationship with yourself and aware of what yourself is in need of, the journey is done before it starts. Finding yourself, listening to yourself and what your inner self needs to heal to be able to move forward, what your inner self needs to grow, that is the most elemental foundation on which you can build a healthy life. You cannot build a healthy life on point tracking. You cannot build a healthy life on calorie counting. But you can build a healthy and sustainable life on a knowledge of this is good for me and this is not good for me. Like that feels like a place to start. And when I was searching, that's where I started. I forgot everything else and just started I started journaling. When I look back on those journal entries now from a year ago, I'm absolutely it just takes my breath away to look at the version of me that was so deeply lost and just did not know where to begin. And in the course of the first month of making myself sit down for 5 minutes after I brush my teeth in the morning and just say, where are you? Where are you? What are you looking for? It just put things into a sense of self-centeredness that feels like antithetical to life in a happy society, but it's really true. Like a sense of like, this is what I need to do. I need to say yes to this and I need to say no to this. I need to seek out opportunities like this because they make me feel good. And I need to say no to things like this because they are keeping me away from things that I want to say yes to. Saying to yourself that you have to give yourself the grace to fail, that you're going to, there is no such thing as a perfect process. There is no such thing as a perfect journey. You have no control. Give it up. Give up that sense of, this person did this and this is how they did it. Step one, step two, step three. And give yourself the grace to define your journey for yourself. You will find the right way for yourself and nobody else will find it for you. But you have to know yourself enough to be able to hear yourself. So, step one, go find your favorite self.
Yeah. I want to get a sign that says that. Be written.
I see it every day of my life, and I think about it every day of my life. My favorite self is strong and happy and it feels like the path is wide. It's not a narrow path to health. This version of me is just a ball rolling down a nice wide path and toward a happy little future. And some days it's to this side of the path, and some days I roll to this side of the path, but I'm rolling, I'm always going forward, toward where I want to be, and not away from things that scare me, but toward the things that make me joyful.
I love that so much. And I already have craft ideas in my mind of I'm going to
Yay!
now sketch a thing that says be your favorite Brittany and put it
Yes!
on.
I love it. I love it. I love
I
it.
need a new, I need new craft. It's time.
Yeah, it's time. This is if nothing else, take craft inspiration from this conversation. Yeah.
If that's it, that's all. That's the one
That's
thing.
it.
That's
I'm
the
really
takeaway.
just here to for your Pinterest board. That's really why I'm here.
Oh my gosh. Any other last final words for everybody listening? Or
I
is it
don't feel, I feel like this has been so cathartic to just like touch base with you and like just to have a chance to thank you for like the huge impact you had on my life and continue to have on my life. Like, I love watching the help that you offer to other people, and I'm so grateful for the algorithm just like popping you into my feed one day. And because I remember the first podcast of yours that I ever listened to was about sugar addiction and how it's not a thing. And I was like, oh, this feels like something that I've kind of built a lot of my personality on, that it's like, I'm addicted to sugar. I don't have to worry about these because it's, I'm a, like learning that was huge. But like, I feel so grateful for like every single thing that you taught me. And I kept good notes. Thank you, Virgo. Thank you, Virgo brain. I kept good notes, and I revisit them all the time. And I'm like, yeah, this makes sense. This is a thing that I can apply now that I've have refound who I am and have realigned myself with my favorite version of myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. I'm so proud of you.
Oh, thank you. I feel like every day is just like baby steps toward a happy goal. That's it.
Absolutely.
Yep.
That's all it needs to be. Baby steps. One
Baby
thing
steps.
at a time, you know?
Exactly. Baby steps. We're all just toddling along.
That we are.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Amazing. Well, it was really awesome connecting with you, and thank you so
Yes.
coming on and chatting with me. And I think everybody who listens to this episode is going to get so much from your wisdom. And
Well, I hope so.
so truly from the bottom of my heart, thank you for being here.
I really appreciate an opportunity to hopefully reach out to somebody who, like me, was just deeply lost. So I hope that this finds who it needs to find.
If you're feeling alone in your challenges with eating and body image, if you really thrive hearing from others who are in the same place as you and want to form a community around empowering yourself to break free from the all or nothing patterns and white knuckling your way through managing your eating, Food Freedom University's small group coaching is for you. We get started on September 16th, so perfect timing to finish off your summer right and have you feeling supported during the holidays in a better place with food and your body. Head over to brittanyallisonrd.com/group-coaching to learn more and book a free consult with me to see if it's a good fit and sign up. Again, that's brittanyallisonrd.com/group-coaching.